Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Money is the Root of All Evil, right after this. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider. An insider like John Swinton, for instance. He was the former editor of the New York Tribune. Here's what he had to say to the New York Press Association on February 26, 1936. He said, "There's no such thing as a free and independent press in America. Well, unless it's in some country town. And there's not one of you who dares to express an honest opinion because you know beforehand it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid $150 a week for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid for doing similar things. Now, if I should permit my honest opinions to be printed in one issue of my paper like Othello, before 24 hours my occupation would be gone. Our business," he said, "is to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his race and his country for his daily bread. We are the tools of rich men behind the scenes. We are intellectual prostitutes." Unquote. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and this New World Order, the men and families like the Windsors, the Rockefeller, the Bushes, Bundys, Carnegies, and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time for us to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and to stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, just call and order my free 4-hour compact disc package. It's educational, entertaining, informative. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org, click on to the email, send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Well, last Sunday I was watching 60 Minutes, and 60 Minutes had a program on, one segment. And they had a guy by the name of Dave Ramsey. Now, Dave Ramsey was featured. He's an advocate of living within your income, no credit, no interest. And he says that interest is your enemy. Pay off your debts. Don't borrow. In short, be financially responsible. It's a wild new concept. Financial responsibility. Now, that's the opposite of the American practice today, but while Dave Ramsey's right about debt, interest, and credit, he never went into the laws that govern and regulate economics. Now, you can go to Dave Ramsey's website. I was so impressed with the presentation that I'd advocate at least go to his website and get some of his information. I don't know how much he charges for his school. But these economic laws are found in the Mosaic Law. They're found in the Bible, the law of God. You don't hear about these economic laws in school, church, or on the job. So I thought you should hear about these 23 economic laws that will convert money into the root of all good instead of the root of all evil. So when you look in the Bible, to start off, in 1 Timothy 6, verse 10, is a statement that says, "The love of money is the root of all evil." Now, if people spend any more time doing anything other than making money, I don't know what it is. You don't spend more time on sex than you do making money. And almost every waking day, every waking hour of every waking day is designed or it's aimed at or it's got something to do with making money. You know, when you go out and talk to your buddies, you know, you're talking about some deal that you made or some raise that you got on the job or something that has to do with money. I bought a house that has to do with money. I put in a swimming pool. That all has to do with money. You're either spending money or you're making money. I went down to Best Buy and I bought this real neat big screen TV and I got this spectacular deal. You're dealing with money again. So you stop, think about it. You know, money is a big part of our lives. Well, God did not ignore money. In fact, the Bible is filled with financial laws. And I mean laws that work, you know, whether you like them or not. You spend more than you make, poverty is your end result. A little folding of your hands and a little sleep, and so surely shall your poverty come upon you. A lot has to do with work and industriousness. There's laws concerning buying, selling, and trading, and how many days a week to work, and usury and interest, and just weights and balances, and thou shalt not steal. I mean, there's a number of them. The thing that I noticed in the 60 Minutes piece was that while Ramsey advocated living within your means and get out of debt and pay your debts off and tear up your credit cards, he didn't mention such things as tithing and taxes. I think those are two pretty big ticket items, tithing and taxes. There are a number of other subjects that get into the process. It's the blessings of Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 28, the statutes on bondsmen. Well, today we don't call you a bondsman. Today we call you an employee. That's right. Today you're called an employee. In ancient times we called you a bondsman. And then there's the laws concerning cattle and covetousness and credit and firstborn and firstfruits and gifts, bribes and rewards. We call that lobbying today. Lobbying, bribery. And then there's gleaning, and that has to do with welfare, charity. Then there are hired servants and Hebrew servants. There's inheritance that comes into play in government and in political circles today. We call it the death tax. God had something to say about inheritance and the death tax. Then we have Jubilee years, just weights and balances. Today we call them Federal Reserve notes and mortgages, but God had something to say about that. Kidnapping comes into play. Not very many of you are probably engaged in kidnapping, but there's some people that have practiced kidnapping in the past, and there's a law that governs that and your economic well-being. Then there are landmarks. We call those surveys today. And then there are land Sabbaths. Then there's lost and found, strict liability. We call insurance today. Most of you have insurance or practice insurance. The Bible has a lot to say about insurance and strict liability. Theft and tithing. Did you know that John D. Rockefeller was a fervent believer in tithing? He made $1 billion, a billion, spelled with a B, back in 1900. That was equivalent to about $950 billion today. Excuse me, one too many zeros there. $95 billion today. 95, not 950. $95 billion today in purchasing power. That would make him worth about twice as much as Bill Gates. Maybe three times as much as Bill Gates, because I understand that Bill has taken a little some losses here since 2000 when the tech bubble broke. But still, all in all, $35 billion is still, you know, pretty good chunk of change. Bill's probably going to get by all right. But my point is, I don't know whether Bill Gates tithes or not. Not everybody tithes, but John D. Rockefeller did, and he made a lot of money. Then there's usury. You know, banks charge interest. Most of you pay a little usury. You've got a mortgage on your house and probably some car payments. And Dave Ramsey has something to say about this interest and usury and buying things beyond your mean. And then there's wages. Most of you work for wages. And then there's work and work habits. 23 laws in the scripture that regulate and govern this thing of making money, spending money, doing something with your money. So let's start off here with the first law deals with blessings. Actually, blessings deal with contract and contract law. In the Bible, when you see the word blessings, I'll give you these blessings. A blessing is a benefit. It's an old King James term, if we were to bring it up into more modern vernacular today, we'd say that these blessings that you're going to receive, these benefits that you're going to receive, are based upon an agreement. They're based upon a contract. Listen to the terms of this contract. This is called a tender offer. And you'll read about this tender offer in Leviticus chapter 26, starting in verse 1. Leviticus 26, verse 1. 13 verses, just takes 2 minutes to read. You shall make you no idols, nor graven images, neither rear you up a standing image, neither shall you set up any image of stone in your land to bow down unto it, because I am the Eternal your God, and you shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary, because I am the Eternal. Well, now, in modern English, you shall make you no idols or graven images. This is a government. This is the United States or New York or California. That's an idol. Neither shall you rear up a standing image. That's your state capitol building or your capitol building in Washington, D.C. And neither shall you set up any image of stone in your land, you know, such as the Washington Monument or the Statue of Liberty, to bow down unto it, that is, to worship it, obey its laws. Because I am the Eternal, your God. God, I am your lawmaker. I am your sovereign. And you shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. God made a mistake there. We're not going to practice God's Sabbaths. We're going to practice the 4th of July and Memorial Day and Mother's Day and Father's Day. We've got our own Sabbaths. We've got our own holy days. But he said that if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, of course, we decided that we didn't want to practice the statutes, laws, and commandments of God. We want to practice the statutes, laws, and commandments of the United States of America or Germany, France, or Belgium. He says, I'll give you rain in due season. And the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit, and your threshing shall reach to the vintage, and the vintage shall reach to the sowing time. And you shall eat your bread to the full, and you shall dwell in your land safely, and I will give you peace in the land, and you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. And I will rid evil beasts out of the land, and neither shall the sword go through your land. I'll rid evil beasts out of your land. Now, what we're doing is we're putting lions and bears back into the land. Well, we're spending millions of dollars to reestablish these wild beasts back in the land. Neither shall the sword go through your land. Well, so far, we haven't had war in this country since 1812. And you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword, and 5 of you shall chase 100. 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight. Well, Andrew Jackson took 1,000 men and put 10,000 British soldiers to flight. And remember Sergeant Alvin York? And he went out and captured 132 Germans by himself. And your enemy shall fall before you by the sword, for I shall have respect unto you and make you fruitful and multiply you and establish my covenant with you. And you shall eat old store, and bring forth the old because of the new, and I will set my tabernacle among you. And my soul shall not abhor you, and I will walk among you, and will be your God, I'll be your sovereign, and you shall be my people, you'll be my subjects, practicing my law. And I am the Eternal, your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, that you should not be their bondsmen, you should not be their employees. And I have broken the bands of your yoke and made you to go upright. So there's Leviticus 26, verses 1 through 13. That's called a tender offer. Tender offer. That's where you come into a business deal and somebody has to make the first offer. And so when you're walking down the street and you look in the window of a department store and it says sale, that's called an offer, tender offer. He's tendering. He's making you. He's putting up the offer. You come into the store and say, I saw your sign in the window. Can you tell me more about it? Then the salesman makes you a verbal offer. He explains to you the terms and conditions of this sale that he wants to make to you. Here's how much money I want. Here's the warranty or the guarantee that I'm offering you. That's a business transaction. Money is involved. This is business. All business is predicated upon contract. And this contract here in Leviticus 26 is a pretty valuable offer. The offer is repeated in a little different words in Deuteronomy chapter 28, verses 1 through 14. It says, "It shall come to pass, if you shall hearken diligently unto the voice of the Eternal your God, to observe and to do all of his commandments, which I command you this day, that the Eternal your God will set you on high above all the nations of the earth, and all of these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you, if you shall hearken unto the voice of the Eternal your God." So, he reiterates now the terms and conditions that were tendered in Leviticus 26. And he says, now, if you practice this law, then here's all the benefits that you're going to receive. This is the explanation to the terms and conditions of the tender offer in Leviticus 26, 1 through 13. It's a business deal, nothing more, nothing less. Now, of course, we Americans have turned this business deal down. Now, our forefathers, they thought it was a pretty good deal, and they said in Exodus 24, verse 7, they said, "All that the Eternal has said, we will do and be obedient." That's the ratification of the contract. That's the signature on the bottom line. And they ratified this contract and they sealed it up with blood and salt. And they stuck it in the Ark of the Covenant, kind of like putting your Constitution in the Capitol Rotunda, you know, in a sealed container with helium gas, you know, to protect the terms and conditions of our Constitution. Constitution, it's a contract. And out of that contract comes benefits. And so the government that you've contracted with offers you these benefits. Welfare and food stamps and aid to families with dependent children and Social Security and all the benefits that you get from the government of the United States are done under contract. And the Constitution is that contract. Well, God originated this process. So when we create these governments like New York, Texas, and California, it's just a carbon copy. It's just a methodology that we learned from the Mosaic Law, except that for some reason we didn't care too much for that law, that contract, that constitution, and we've now in more modern times we've changed that. We came along and decided that God didn't know quite what he was talking about and probably didn't have too good of a program, so we thought we'd improve upon it. And God's terms and conditions here in Deuteronomy 28 go on to tell us, he says, "Blessed shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the field, and blessed shall be the fruit of your body and the fruit of your ground and the fruit of your cattle, the increase of your kine and the flocks of your sheep. Blessed shall be the basket and store. Blessed shall you be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out. And the Eternal shall cause your enemies that rise up against you to be smitten before your face. They shall come out against you one way, and they shall flee before you seven ways. The Eternal shall command the blessing upon you in your storehouses, and in all that you set your hand unto, and he shall bless you in the land which the Eternal your God gives you. And the Eternal shall establish you a holy people unto himself, as he has sworn unto you, if you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God and walk in his ways. So I want you to notice here that there are some terms and conditions. In order for you to collect on these benefits, you have to practice these 23 laws that govern economics. Notice that this statute that says, he said, blessed shall be your basket and store, blessed shall you be when you come in and when you go out. The Lord will cause your enemies that rise up against you to be smitten before your face. Well, did you notice that in Afghanistan, he caused our enemies to be smitten? They attacked us in self-defense. We counterattacked. That Afghan war has gone very nicely. Now take a look by comparison to the Iraqi war. Hey, that deal over there isn't near as good a deal as the one in Afghanistan. Did you notice that? And World War II, did you notice how swiftly, severely, we trashed the Japanese for attacking us in Pearl Harbor? I just want to point that out, that, you see, that benefit was ours under the terms of the contract. When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, for them it was the kiss of death. Because now they had the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob working against them and working for us. Now, when you get on the wrong side of this law, then you've got curses. We'll see what these curses are in a minute. But he goes on, he says, all the people of the earth shall see that you're called by the name of the Eternal, and they shall be afraid of you. And the Eternal shall make you plenteous in goods, and in the fruit of your body, and in the fruit of your cattle, and in the fruit of your ground, and in the land which the Eternal swore unto your fathers to give you. And the Eternal shall open unto you his good treasure, the heaven to give you rain unto the land in his season, and to bless all the work of your hand. And you shall lend unto many nations, and you shall not borrow. As we go through these 23 economic laws as they relate to money, you know, money, the root of all evil, you'll find out that we Americans no longer lend to all nations, we borrow from all the nations. In other words, we're beginning to see now a reversal in the terms and conditions of the contract. And there's a cause and effect relationship here. Now, Dave Ramsey sees what the effect of this debt is, bad economic practices, and so he says, let's change that. Good point, Dave. I agree. But if you don't change the cause, but you work only on the effect, ultimately, you'll get swallowed up by that cause again. So I think that we'd be better served if we found out, well, what causes the effect? It's kind of like disease. You know, you smoke cigarettes and you get lung cancer. Cause and effect relationship. Now, most people would say, well, just because I got cancer by smoking cigarettes doesn't mean I should quit smoking. That's what most people's conclusion would be. My conclusion would be, I think you should quit smoking. In fact, I don't think you should start smoking. I think that if you were smart, you'd look at the guy that got lung cancer and say, well, he smoked and he got lung cancer, so I'm not going to smoke. Now, we all know smoking causes lung cancer, cause and effect. Now, if we could find out the cause of poverty, if we could find out what causes trade imbalances, if we could find out what causes debt, if we could find out what causes these economic penalties that we Americans are suffering here nationally, like a $7 trillion debt and an income tax and social security taxes and so on, if we could figure out the cause, couldn't we then eliminate that cause and eliminate the effect at the same time? That's a wild new concept. He goes on to say, the Eternal shall make you the head and not the tail, and you shall be above only, and you shall not be beneath. But if that thou hearken unto the commandments of the Eternal your God, which I command you this day, to observe and to do them, and you shall not go aside from any of the words which I command you this day, to the right hand or to the left, to go after other gods to serve them. Now he says, I don't want you going after these other sovereigns. Let's take a look at the word sovereign. If you'll look that up in Bouvier's Law Dictionary, you'll see that it's a lawmaker. Well, now this guy that wrote the Bible, this guy that we call God, is a lawmaker, and these are some of his laws. He says, here's what I want you to do, and I want to be your God, I want to be your sovereign, your lawmaker, and I want you to be my subjects, my people, and I want you to obey my law. Well, that's all the United States government's doing. They come along and they enact laws in Washington, D.C., and they say, now we want you to obey our laws. We want you to buckle your seatbelt and drive 55. And we want you to pay your taxes and go to work and do all those things that good Americans do. So you can see here that we got a little conflict. On the one hand, we've got a God that says, don't do that. Don't practice the laws of the United States. You practice my laws. Now, we came along, I know my dad did, my dad came along and he said, well, I'm going to give my son real citizenship, so he got me a birth certificate in the United States of America. And he made me a citizen of the United States of America instead of a citizen of the Kingdom of Israel. He wanted to give his son real citizenship. Well, that citizenship now binds me to the Constitution of the United States and all the laws, customs, usages, and practices that the United States imposes. You know, things like income tax and social security taxes and property taxes and automobile laws and all these various and sundry laws. Now, we had a choice to make and we made the choice. So when we're talking about economics and we talk about money, the income tax and social security and paper money from the Federal Reserve in place of gold and silver coin are choices that we Americans have made through our sovereign government, our lawmaker, our God. Now, idolatry is a violation of the first commandment, and in Leviticus 18, verses 3 through 5, kind of a wild new concept here, but in Leviticus 18, see if I can find it here quickly. It says, after the doings of the land of America wherein you dwelt shall you not do, and after the doings of the land of California where I bring you shall you not do, and neither shall you walk in their laws and ordinances. You shall do my judgments and keep my ordinances to walk therein, because I am the Eternal your God. You shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, which if a man do, he shall live in them, because I am the Eternal. Well, in the original, Moses wrote Egypt and Canaan rather than the United States and California, but you know, all you got to do is extrapolate that into modern times. Whether you live in Germany, and it's Germany and Bavaria, or whether you live in the United States and California, or France and Brittany, or some other country and some other state, you know, the God of creation has told you there's benefits for practicing my law. And there are 23 of these economic laws. And if you practice these 23 economic laws, you're going to be wealthy and prosperous and happy as a clam at high tide. And you can turn the love of money from the root of all evil to good. The reason that money or the love of money is the root of evil is because we're not practicing the laws that regulate economics. So hang on. We'll be back with more on the laws of economics and the law of God when we come back right after this. All right, we're back. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God gives you, for all that do such things and all that do unrighteously are an abomination unto the Eternal your God." He said that in Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16. Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed this scriptural principle when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, where it says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, Franklin Roosevelt took away our gold, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. And in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. They gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Was it Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School conducted here at the law school or in your own home on compact disc. To learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call right now to order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Mosaic Law is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Dave Ramsey. He was on 60 Minutes last Sunday. And I think he's got a pretty good program. He's got a pretty good idea. It's scriptural in its overall presentation, or the overall gist of it. But I thought, at least they didn't present it on 60 Minutes, that there's a more important thing to learn, and that is, what caused this cancer? You go to the doctor, and he says, "Well, I've got good news and bad news. The good news is, we can identify your disease. You have cancer. Now, the bad news is, we don't have a cure for it, and we don't know what causes it." Now, it would seem like to me that it would be more important for us to find out what causes this cancer and how do you cure it. Now, I think Mr. Ramsey has a good treatment for this debt problem, and I want to recommend, if you get sick with debt, you need a treatment. If you get sick with cancer, you certainly need a treatment, but I think that we could go a step further and find out what causes this disease, and then let's eliminate it. I think you'd be better served. And God does that in the Bible. The Bible is the book that gives us the vital information that you need to have revealed to you. You have to have this information revealed to you. And that's because there's no other way for you to find out about tithing. You would not accidentally practice tithing and get the economic benefits that come from it. You wouldn't know anything about it. So God came along and he said, you have to tithe, and the reason that you have to tithe is because it's a part of our contract that I made with your forefathers years ago. You tithe, you give me 10%, and I'll guarantee you that you'll get your 90%. But if you don't tithe, then I'm not going to guarantee that you get your 90%. So one of the things that's wrong here in America, and I presume worldwide, but I can tell you from my first-hand observations here in the United States, one of our problems is that we won't tithe, and because we don't tithe, we don't make a lot of money. Now, John D. Rockefeller tithed. John D. Rockefeller practiced a lot of, I don't know if he practiced all 23 of these economic laws, but I know he practiced a lot of them. And I know he practiced a lot of them because he made $1 billion. Now, he was a pretty wicked, evil fellow, and there's a lot of wicked, evil fellows around that make a lot of money. But just because they're wicked and evil doesn't mean that they're not practicing the laws that produce wealth. So if a guy's producing the laws that produce wealth, they're going to make a lot of money. They're going to get wealthy. If a person practices health laws, he's going to be healthy. If you violate those health laws, you'll get sick. That's my point. Now, Dave Ramsey's doing a great service in telling you how to treat this debt problem. And you can go to his webpage. It's simple. It's DaveRamsey.com. DaveRamsey.com. But let's go a step further and let's see if we can uncover what causes this problem. Money is the root of all evil. Listen to this. The chilling costs of illegal alien migration. In 2003, according to the Arizona Department of Motor Vehicles, 57,000 cars were stolen in Phoenix, Arizona. It is now the carjacking capital of the world, and most were SUVs and pickup trucks. At a conservative average of $15,000 per vehicle, owner losses exceeded $864 million. Insurance companies in the state suffered incredible claims from policyholders. It's worse. How would you like to walk out of your home or business to see your car gone? Imagine the hassle, the violation of your hard work and disrespect for your well-being. Where did these vehicles go and who stole them? Well, just take a guess. Arizona is the temporary home of 500,000 illegal aliens, and they cost Arizona taxpayers over $1 billion a year in services for schools, medical care, welfare anchor babies, loss of tax base, and prisons. Illegals use those vehicles for smuggling more people and drugs from around the world into Arizona and into the United States. And when the vehicles are recovered, they are smashed up wrecks in the desert. And if they're not found, they have new owners south of the border, as these thieves drive the cars through the desert and into Mexico as easily as you drive your kids to soccer practice. That's how porous our borders are. And the chilling costs of illegal migration reach like an octopus into every aspect of our lives, whether you live in New York or Arizona. Illegal aliens displace American workers at a cost in excess of $133 billion a year, according to Harvard professor George Borges. College and high school children cannot find a summer job in yard care, landscape, fast food, or service jobs. And why is that? Well, because the illegal aliens work them at a third the wage and often under the table. Not only do our children not have jobs, they're paying taxes for illegal aliens who are not paying taxes either. Annually, 75% of the drugs that arrive from Mexico at a net cost of $120 billion a year in hard currency that leaves our country for good. It's a part of our balance of payments deficit. In addition, our tax dollars pay $80 billion for the war on drugs each year that we pay directly in taxes. It's a war that hasn't been won in the past 30 years and isn't going to be won in the next 30 years. And the drugs today are just as available to your teenager as they were in 1970. Now, when an alien criminal gets caught for rape, murder, or drug distribution, you pay $1.6 billion a year in prison costs to house, feed, and clothe all of those aliens, filling 30% of our federal and state prisons. And of course, that doesn't include the TV, movies, weight rooms, and other entertainment that they enjoy while they're incarcerated in this country. Well, now is your blood boiling? Well, how about the illegal alien anchor babies? Over 300,000 women every year arrive pregnant and then drop their babies on U.S. soil. Then you pay food, housing, medical, and schooling costs for them up to age 18, in addition to their mothers. Now, according to the Center for Immigration Studies, the average annual cost per child from kindergarten through age 12 is $7,161 per year. Now, that exceeds $109 billion a year for the cycle of these annual babies. They call them anchor babies. Now, that's your money given out to 300,000 of these alien mothers and their children annually. And all they did was get pregnant, and they were smart enough to give birth to that child on U.S. soil. Now, if you haven't had a heart attack by now, you'll need Tums after this figure. The average head of household illegal alien costs you $2,700 in welfare money over and above any taxes that he or she may pay in their meager paying jobs. With 15 to 20 million illegal aliens in the United States today, the figures exceed $20 billion of your tax money. This information comes from the Center for Immigration Studies, published in August of 2004. Your tax dollars at work. And how about the $56 billion in pure cash illegal migrants sent to their home countries last year and every year? That goes on to the balance of payments deficit also. And that's after their children enjoy free education, free school lunches, free medical care, paid for by you. And then Mexico receives $15 billion annually from its worker drones who work here in the United States and send that money back to their families. No wonder Mexican President Vicente Fox sent us 9.2 million illegal alien Mexicans so far and wants to send us more. The lifetime net fiscal drain, that is taxes paid minus services used, for an adult immigrant is $55,200 according to Carrying Capacity Network. Who makes up that money? You do. Your work through your taxes. Now, with a minimum of 15 million illegal aliens in our country already, these figures are the tip of the iceberg. Average bilingual education is $1,200 per illegal alien student. You got that? You see, we educate 1.1 million illegal alien children every year. Now, all you have to do is do the math. Now, are you ready for another anvil dropped on your toe? You paid $27 billion to provide forms, ballots, interpreters, and brochures for languages other than English in 2003. That's right, $27 billion, because we can't expect these people to speak English. Now, can we? Then an estimated one-third to one-half of the illegal aliens work off the books. That is, they work under the table. It costs $200 million to provide for emergency health care for illegal aliens in the border states every year. California, with over 3 million illegal aliens, paid $79 million. But, as a consequence, four major Los Angeles area hospitals went into bankruptcy and shut their doors in 2004. Texas, with 1.5 million illegal aliens, paid $74 million in hospital care. Well, who's paying this? Well, you do in your taxes. You, the taxpayer, that's who. because you, in your state, pay commensurate medical care according to your illegal alien population. Georgia ran a $63 million deficit for 64,000 unpaid doctor visits to their Grady healthcare system in 2002. In that same year, Georgia taxpayers paid $27 million for 11,000 anchor baby hospital births. And Georgia taxpayers paid a whopping $242 million for educating illegal alien children in 2003. And all you have to do is figure out how many illegal aliens do you have in your state, and you're paying your prorated share. Now, what are the consequences to all of this? Well, one in two adult African Americans in New York is unemployed. African American children's poverty grew by 50% since 1999. And why is that? Well, it's because their parents can't find work. And it costs you, the taxpayer, $68 billion a year just to pay for the resettlement of legal immigrants. Now, fellow Americans, we are $7.384 trillion in debt as of November 1st, 2004. This year's budget deficit exceeds $413 billion. Our trade deficit stands at $400 billion plus. Our consumer debt exceeds $2 trillion, and our average credit card carries an $8,000 balance. Our U.S. government borrows $1.6 billion a day from foreign banks just to stay afloat. Now, have you ever heard about the Titanic? Well, we are taking on heavy immigration numbers while we're being financially bled to death. Now, do you think that we're in financial trouble or what? Who brings this fiscal nightmare into America? Well, let's take a guess. The majority of your Congress is number one. President George W. Bush is number two. Tom Ridge, number three. Remember Tom Ridge, who's supposed to guard our borders from this invasion? But he gets his orders from George Bush. And illegals are arriving at over 4,000 every day, according to Time Magazine, September 12, 2004. Now, who left this door open? Well, the total of illegal immigrants flooding into the United States this year will total 3 million. That's enough to fill 22,000 737 Boeing airliners or 60 flights every day for a year. Now, don't you think that with that many illegals crossing nightly, that anyone with a brain would send troops to our border to protect our borders from an invasion? Since we just elected the same Congress and the same president, don't you think we can expect more of the same for 4 more years? Now, you can count on your corporations devouring cheap labor as they send you to the unemployment lines. And additionally, they pay PAC groups to keep senators and congressmen in their back pocket. How do I know that? Well, that's because only 22 companies in 2003 were taken to court for hiring illegal aliens. Nobody went to jail. However, it's a $10,000 fine per illegal alien hired and up to 5 years in prison. Now, you'd think that should deter corporations, not when they're bought off by the government. Well, who else figures in this grand scheme? Well, your governors and mayors who provide sanctuary laws for illegal aliens, mayors like Mayor Bloomberg of New York City, Mayor Baldacci of Maine, Governor Bill Owens of Colorado, Mayor Hickenlooper of Denver, Mayor of Los Angeles, the Mayor of San Francisco, the Mayor of Chicago, the Mayor of Miami. How do I know? Well, all of those cities and dozens more give sanctuary to illegal aliens with Special Order 40. Illegals remain in our country with exemption from arrest, yet they are federal criminals. Now, can you blame millions of desperate people for coming illegally to America? Well, no, not hardly. Do you think that they will stop coming since the world adds 80 million annually of poor, hopeless people from war-torn, ravaged, and impoverished third world countries? Not a chance. Remember, this is the land of free milk and honey, and as long as our leaders allow the invasion and not enough Americans speak up, you can expect 12 million more illegal aliens over the next 4 years. And who's going to pay for all of this invasion of our country? You do. All right, now we're looking at 23 laws that govern economics. Do you remember the first law on blessings? Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, where God said, "Listen, boys and girls, if you follow my instructions and do what I tell you, you'll be blessed in the city, you'll be blessed in the country, you'll be blessed when you come in, and you'll be blessed when you go out." Ah, but what I didn't tell you was the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would tell you. Now go back to Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, and start off in verse 14, and read the rest of the chapters. See, that's the other side of the story that hasn't been told. Now, if you don't know what the cause is, and you simply look at the effect, then you're not very likely to do very much about it. Now, America is being cursed with a curse because we won't practice the economic laws that God requires. 23 of them. I'm going to cover those 23 laws for you as we progress along. And I want to show you what the cause and effect relationship is. This is just one of the effects that we receive. Now, we have to pay taxes because we won't tithe. Now, tithing is quite a little subject, but I'm going to give you a little story here on tithing from the book of Malachi. It's Malachi 3, verse 8. Let's take a look at it here. It says, "Will a man rob God?" Now, that's quite a statement. It's quite a question. It says, "Will you rob God?" I think most of you religious people out there, 65% of Americans go to church every Sunday. That's pretty phenomenal. 65% of Americans go to church every Sunday. You 65% out there, will you rob God? See, the other 35 would say, "Well, of course I'll rob God. I don't believe in God. To hell with God. I'm going to keep my money. That's mine, and I'm going to spend it on me." But 65% of you people go to church, and so I presume that 65% of you would answer, "Gee, no, I wouldn't rob God. Yet you have robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed you?" And the answer is in tithes and offerings. So there's two requirements here under the old covenant. Now remember in Exodus 24, verse 7, the people said to Moses, "All that the Eternal has said, we will do and be obedient." 84 generations ago, your great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy was standing out there at Mount Sinai, all of you Anglo-Saxons. And God said to those people, "You practice my law, you follow these instructions, and here are the benefits that you're going to get." And that benefit sounded pretty good to them, so they said, "All that the Eternal has said, we will do and be obedient." That's a contract. It's called the Old Covenant. The word covenant is simply an Old English term for contract, an agreement. Now, all contracts are oral. When a contract is written down, you see it reduced to writing. The writing is the highest and best evidence of the contract. And a contract is an agreement. It's a meeting of the minds. And way back there, 84 generations ago, about 3,100 years ago, your great-granddaddy said, "Yep, yep, I'll sign on. And he did. You didn't, he did. And when he signed on, he brought himself under the terms and conditions of these 23 economic laws. And another one of those economic laws deals with inheritance. And we Americans are the inheritors. We are the heirs and assigns forever. Now, I don't know how long forever is, but I do know that it's not up yet. So however long forever is, tain't up yet. And you and I are the heirs and assigns of those original contractors who died. And that's why we have to have an inheritance law. You see, the inheritance law is the mechanism by which these people who do not have eternal life contracted with God who has eternal life. Once God gave those benefits, once God divorced himself from that property, it became the property of those people who passed it on to you and me. So since 1803, with the Louisiana Purchase, we Americans have become pretty wealthy, prosperous people. Now it's being taken away from us, and there's a cause and effect relationship. There are violations of these 23 economic laws. Now, you may be practicing 9 of these laws, or 14 of these laws, or 18 of these laws. But you know, if you've got financial problems, you're not practicing all 23. Cancer isn't caused exclusively by smoking cigarettes. Cancer has a number of causes. And poverty and debt have a number of causes. And while the cause of usury is one cause for poverty, it's not the exclusive cause for all of our financial woes and problems in America. Any more than smoking causes all cancer. So God goes on and says, "You're cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation." So in verses 8 and 9, he tells you what the problem is. You're not tithing. Now, I'm not going to get into a long-winded discussion on tithing. That's another story for another day. I just wanted to point out to you that there are a number of statutes on tithing, and tithing is one of those economic laws. Just like the blessing statutes in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Are statutes that deal with economic prosperity. It's the founding block. It's the building, the cornerstone of the building. It is the basis of the contract. Tithing is just one of the 23 requirements. So, as a nation, we've been robbing God, and he comes back and says, "You're cursed with a curse," and now illegal immigration is one of those curses that's coming down upon us. And it costs you. It's costing you a lot of money. Because you won't tithe, because you won't practice these 23 laws, you can pay the money in another form. That's what that game is all about. Hey, I'm just about out of time. We'll have to come back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. Don't forget. And we'll take it up right there. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right. Now, tomorrow night we'll be back. We'll take a look at this 23 laws that are causing our problems, economic laws. So until next time, I'm George Gordon, your host, saying goodnight, friends.